The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Fast Money starts right now, live from the NASDAQ market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lear. Traders on the desk are Pete Najarian, Tim Seymour, Brian Kelly, and Guy Adami. Tonight on Fast, Bitcoin's gone wild, soaring past 11,000 and then plunging nearly 20%, almost an intraday bear market before rebounding once again. So what does this all mean? Our resident Bitcoin expert BK will break it down and make a trade live on air. Plus, American Airlines facing some turbulence today after a major misstep from the company put all of its holiday travel at risk. We'll tell you how bad it could get. And later, there's a retail stock that's down 15% this year, and Pete here says it's the perfect bargain buy. He will explain why. But first, we start off with war. It's been the ultimate tug of war in the market this year between growth and value, and we saw it come to a head today as growth stocks like technology got absolutely crushed. Value stocks like financials and telecom soared, a reversal of the trend we have seen for most of this year. So as we head into the end of the year, if you're putting new money to work now, what is the better bet? Surging growth or lagging value? Guy.
Still think there's room to go in retail. And, you know, we'll start that. If that's surging growth, then I'm a believer in that. So I think the retail trade still works. Tim's been talking about Macy's. Look at the last week or so. And look at Nordstrom since earning. I still think there's some upside there. With that said, technology that has sold off, you know, Pete will say this and he'll be right. Every time you've seen a sell-off of this magnitude, people will say, you know, it's sort of different this time. There's something going on. And each time it's proven to be buying opportunity. In my world, the best one shakes out to be Google. And if you look at valuation, if you look at all the things they've done, if you look at last quarter, I think Google's getting lumped in with everybody else. So I would buy Google on this dip.
What do you think, Beaks?
Well, for me, it all comes down to rates. I mean, the market showed today, and it's shown many times, that it's highly sensitive to increasing rates. So, you know, that we go back to this equity risk premium or what price you'll pay for stocks giving a certain level of interest rates. And you saw it today. The high PE stocks got hit as rates went higher. So going into the end of the year, you know, I'm making a bet that I think rates are headed higher at this point in time. So, you know, as a hedge to your portfolio, you can either be long TBT or you could probably buy the financials here. They had a great day today, and I think they keep running.
Yeah, although, I mean, the move in rates today, I think, is a little puzzling, frankly, because, I mean, yeah, we got a great GDP number. We pieced together the two consecutive quarters of the best GDP growth probably since 2014. We have a case to be made that the fourth quarter could be stronger. I get all that. And I think rates need to go higher, and I agree that the Fed is my biggest fear out there. But if I think about what happened today, it was absolutely allocation. And you can see that even in things like the TBT, which is when you're getting long the long end of the curve, which moved disproportionately to the move in long rates, frankly. It's one of the reasons why I stay away from these things, because I don't think they are representative. But if you look at what's going on in the transports, again, Dow theorist, Mel. I mean, these are folks that are believing that if financials and transports are rallying, they are leading indicators of the economy, and they're moving everything higher. Today was a day I think you have to fear the divergence we saw between the NASDAQ and small caps. There's strange stuff going on in the market, and I think there's more to come before the end of the year.
You know, when I look at the FANG names, not one of them is down 10% from their highs. So is there an opportunity yet? I don't think there is yet. I'd like to see a little bit further pullback, quite frankly. Yes, there's a little bit of a pullback. And you look at something that's down $4, $5, $6, $16, depending on what it is.
That implies that you think that there is going to be a further pullback.
It implies that that would be my next entry point that I would have. And I'm in many of these names. So I'm already in a Micron. I'm in Microsoft. I'm in Apple. I'm in a multiple of these names. So, but I would be adding to it if I see that kind of a signal. Otherwise, this is just a little bit of, it's moving around. It's rotation. We've talked about it all through 2017. Suddenly, you look at the financials, you start to look at some of the other names. I mean, the healthcare stocks. Look at a name like Humana. Look at some of these names that have
United
moved to
Healthcare.
The upside.
I mean, it's a beast.
Yeah, United Healthcare, another one that absolutely lifting all, everybody else with them. And meanwhile, as the financials are settling down a little bit, those are picking up. And I tell you what, I have never seen as much paper in the financials as I have over the last two or three trading days. Absolutely amazing how much paper we've seen in the options world.
So I shouldn't be spooked by this big decline in FANG across the board in today's session. You know, I bumped into Cramer at the New York Stock Exchange this morning. He's like, remember that FANG ETF that just launched? Maybe that was the sign of the top. I mean, literally, those are the kinds of questions you got to ask yourself, because this was fairly scary. I mean, it seemed quiet on the surface, but this rotation was pretty fierce.
I think the reality of that is this. The people who own Facebook, own Apple, own, you know, you go through the list of the names, and I'm not just talking Fang. You can expand it a little bit further. They're all the same folks. And so if they are rolling out of some positions going into year end, maybe they're doing some of that. I think if we see these 10% pullbacks, that's an opportunity. The only reason I don't like chips to buy them right this minute is many of those names, Micron, it's up 100% year to date. Mm. You look over at Applied Materials, up 65% year to date. These pullbacks aren't enough to say, hey, these are pulling back from where they were when they hit highs a month ago. These names haven't absolutely, you know, pulled back to the point where you go, I just got to own them.
Yeah, I mean, we've had this conversation probably three or four times this year with this rotation.
Yes.
You get a little bit of a rate scare, and then there's the rotation into the financials, and you can buy the FANGs again, right? I'm with people, though. I think, you know, you might get a little bit more of a rate scare here. But remember, as we start to get up towards 3% in the 10-year, then the market's going to start saying, hey, wait a second. Maybe the Fed isn't behind the curve. Maybe the Fed isn't going to be as aggressive as everybody thought. And that's probably when you want to start buying the FANG stocks. When it looks ugly and you feel like you want to throw up on your shoes, that's when you want to buy FANG.
3% is a big runway from here.
It is a big runway.
So every 10% pullback begins with a 2% pullback, begins with a 3% pullback. So how do we know that this isn't the start of that?
You don't know. I mean, but every opportunity, you know, we talked about this at the top of the show. Every time, everybody says it's different this time. Well, it hasn't been different this time for the last 8 years. But then you look at situations like, look at AMAT, for example. We talked about this stock last week. It pushed up to $60. We said, you know what? Great company, great run, great quarter, not enough. Double top from 1999. And look at what AMAT has done since, down 7.5% with the rest of the space. There's a stock that might be in trouble in the short term. That's a name that's gone from basically 30 to 60 in the blink of an eye.
I'm going to ask the flip side of that question that I just said. How do you know it's not the beginning of something bigger? If we can put up that chart once again, this shows the NASDAQ and what it's been doing. And every single dip, and we haven't had that many dips, right, of more than a percent this year on any index. Every dip has been an opportunity to buy. Well, you don't wait for that 10%. You had to go for that 1%.
Although we've got 10% in individual names. I'll give you a great example.
True.
We've
that's
had
true.
The Home Depots of the world.
That's
we've
true.
Had the Apples of the world. We've had names where they've pulled back a full 10%. That's been a great opportunity. The other ones, these have been very, very shallow pullbacks. When it goes in a multitude of stocks, it makes it look like it seems, oh, my goodness, the whole world's going down. But these have been all shallow, quite frankly.
I just, you know, think about what we've had this week. Again, we've had a Fed that's let you know that I think, if anything, you have continuity and you have, for lack of, until proven otherwise, it's dovishness. And then we have this whole tax thing. I mean, we talked about this yesterday. You have a case where, if nothing else, it looks like the team that can't fly straight is starting to get on the same page. Doesn't really matter. Of course you're going to see financials outperform. Of course you're going to see retail outperform. Of course you're going to see the rotation. And they're not going to do that intraday. I mean, literally, you will see guys begin to make adjustments going into year end. And I think the volatility that you're seeing here is a natural thing. Also, see, look at the moves that we had in Amazon and Facebook over the last week or two. They hit fresh highs. We've taken the top off the TP, and that shouldn't be a surprise. We've seen this rotation. Yes, top off the TP.
I've never heard that expression whatsoever.
Well, think about what a TP
before.
Looks like. Yeah, thank you.
I didn't think the TP had a top. Isn't the top open so the smoke can come out?
I'll leave that for others to mine. Anyway, I'm not an expert.
Depends on the season. Yes.
Anyway, okay, let's move on here. Let's bring in Tony Dwyer, chief market strategist at Canaccord Genuity. I will not ask you, Tony, about TPs.
Thank you.
But in terms of this notion of the rotation, is this a rotation that you respect, meaning that you go with this rotation out of technology into the likes of financials?
Well, here's one of the reasons that I think we're actually on a correction call that's been wrong for the last percent and a half or so. And the reason is when we initially increased our target this year to 2470 early in March and reiterated and have gone up a little bit since, it's because the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index was so low. So many people were calling for the economy to collapse, and we were saying that a lot of those headwinds that have been with the cycle during this cycle have become tailwinds. You now have global growth. You now have a lower dollar positively impacting earnings. You have increased capital spending plans, increased incomes. All those things were really good, and expectations were really low. What makes this one a little bit different is that Citigroup Economic Surprise Index has spiked. So that creates an opportunity to disappoint the market that we haven't had for most of this year. So that said, let's go with the baseline. One of the fears that I hear from everybody is the flattening yield curve. If you look at the 2-year to 10-year U.S. Treasury yield curve spread, and you look at the first time in the last three cycles that you hit 60 basis points, which we did last week, your median gain was 63% over 1,000 days later. Your worst case gain was 36% over the course of 2.5 years. So that's your baseline. So when you think about whether you
can
have
But we haven't been this flat on the yield curve in a decade, Tony, right?
Correct, I mean, since the last cycle.
There aren't too many instances to measure that off of, in other words, yeah, right?
But that's what, if you're looking at a flattening yield curve, I think that the mistake that some may make, not that BK would make a mistake, he's going to do a trade later on TV, is that that's the two things.
I make mistakes all the time. It shocks me every time I make it, but I do still make
I don't think the yield on the 10-year is going to 3%. If you're the Fed and you're raising rates because inflation expectations are going up,
the long end's going to flatten.
What does that do to long-term inflation expectations? It dampens them. Mm-hmm. So the 10-year stays flat, and that's why the Fed ends up inverting the curve. They would rather go into a recession than risk hyperinflation. So I don't think that the 10-year is going to 3%. We think it's going to stay around here. The Fed follows their dot plot. They invert the curve in second or third quarter of next year. And that is when you get the correction that we're talking about, like a real good 10%er. That's what happens. And then you got to buy that because, again, the rally is much longer.
Okay, Tony, so today was, you know, essentially tech versus everything else, obviously tech getting sold. Yeah. What in that everything else do you like the most? Retail's had a major breakout here. Do you stay there?
I think that you're going to get a little bit of a drop in the bond yield. So I think actually based on that correction call, you get a little bit of lift in the bond surrogate trade. You get some more of the short covering in retail, maybe live a little bit in energy. And again, the banks are the two sectors that do the best when the yield curve is flattening from where it is today to when it inverts is financials and information technology. So like I said, I think you could have a little bit more weakness in technology. And I've said this so many times on the show. You never, ever, 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 ever want to get negative in a fundamentally driven bull market until well after you invert the curve. It's not whether you can have a correction. The correction
is
still a
long way off. So mid-next year, the yield curve inverts, but you stay long the markets through that inversion.
Totally. History commands it. You've not peaked a cycle on an inversion of the curve in a levered economy in the last three cycles. So if you want to bet it's different this time, like so many people have this cycle, have at it. I'm going to go with the human nature trade and the history trade.
No, and in fact, we've seen the ISMs, we've seen the consumer, we've seen the services and the manufacturing side of ISM. We're essentially at highs, and the divergence with GDP is very little. In other words, we're probably going higher on GDP.
We're going high, and you're going to have, here's what will probably happen too, Tim, is you're going to get a rollover in the PMIs like some other strategists have been looking for. Finally, you're going to get it. You're going to have the peak growth in the PMIs because those tailwinds, everybody knows them. In March, when we were talking synchronized global recovery, you were doing the same thing, Tim. You and I were sitting next to each other on the set talking about it. Nobody was talking about a global synchronized recovery. They were talking about Brexit, the Trump trade failing. Now everybody's talking about it. So you get better growth and a rolling over of rate of change creates a correction opportunity.
So basically, the bottom line here, Tony, is you see an inversion of the yield curve coming. You stay long no matter how scared, no matter how worried, no matter how much fear you have.
That's correct.
Through
and
the inversion.
Significantly overweight those sectors that have done the best, maybe neutralize it for the very near term.
Okay.
Look to get in because, to quote my friend Pete, hashtag giddy up.
Yep.
There's a long way left until well after you invert the curve.
Well said.
Tony, good to see you.
Nice. Great to see you.
Thanks for
hashtag
giddy
up.
Hashtag guy.
Retail still works. You know, we're talking about it, and you got to look at names that have a lot of room given the sell-offs they've seen. We talked about Nordstrom's. Look at the move in Nordstrom since they reported. And Dollar Gen, Pete talked Dollar Tree, I think, last week. We mentioned Dollar Gen. Those stocks are working as well. I think DG a 52-week high today. So if you think the retail rally is over, I would suggest you're probably in the early innings.
What did you do today, Pete?
You know, I bought a lot of different financials, added to a lot of positions along the way. Citi, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, all new or added to. Humana is one of the names also that I put.
What's your biggest financial position right now?
Excuse me?
What's your biggest financial position?
Bank of America by far.
Okay.
But I like the leverage of what I'm seeing right now in Citi as well. But, you know, I also had an opportunity to sell off something. You know, we talk about the tech getting killed today. Nuance and some of these other names that came out. We had unusual activity in some of these. We got the lift. Take them off and move on. I am not married to any of these positions. I'm only married to my wife. The rest of these, I can go in and out. And it's
thank you for coming. Thank you.
I'm sure she's happy to hear that.
You're only married to one thing.
At least you think so.
Good job.
Well, so listen, for me, the one thing that I think we all talked about here is you have this under the current volatility. And so I'm looking for something in the financials because they really took off today that also does well in a higher volatility, high dispersion type of area. So to me, I'm looking right at Goldman Sachs, right? It's got all the tailwinds that you need. They should be doing better. They're trading business. business should do be doing better when there's volatility and when there's volatility in the bond market as well. So to me, that's where you be.
Very happy to take 25% out of Macy's, which has been a big run. It's up 35% in the last month. Nibbled more back in airlines. They're starting to work again. Rails, transports.
All right, coming up, Bitcoin's gone nuts, hitting record highs and then crashing, then soaring. It's like a parody of a Katy Perry song. Brian Kelly, our resident Bitcoin expert and Katy Perry fan, will make a cryptocurrency trade live on the air. Is he buying or selling? Stick around to find out. Plus, Electronic Arts launched a Star Wars game that's sparking major outrage in the gaming world, and the gaming stocks are paying the price. We will explain why. And later, Pete here has been on fire with his fast pitches, and there's one beaten down name he says is a screaming buy right now. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. The airlines surging today. That kicks off our top trades, lifting the whole group of transports, in fact, which are having their best day in more than a year. Delta, United, JetBlue, Southwest, all taking off. But take a look at American Airlines today. The stock sinking after a company-wide glitch has left thousands of flights around the holidays without pilots to fly the planes, Tim.
Yeah, and obviously this is a little bit different than just a glitch where there's a lot of delayed flights. This is clearly something that has people thinking twice. I think ultimately there's going to be certainly some detail on this. I think this is probably an opportunity to buy underperformance of American. American and Delta, to me, are the names that I think have the most operational leverage in this environment. And I think both have proven that they're able to do it. In fact, I would be buying weakness in American here. I have a nice full position in Delta and in United. But again, with the airlines, it's about efficiency and how they're running their business. And right now, these guys have shown that they're through the worst of the perception. And I think you stay there.
One of the bigger reasons behind the broad pop in the group is UBS was very bullish today, saying that they think that a lot of the carriers are going to actually revise higher their Q4 PRASMs, Tim, passenger revenue.
Thank you. I'm glad you're saying it today. I'm a broken record on PRASM.
But look at what the airlines have done really since July, August, right? I mean, they've traded kind of in this big, wide range. So I get it. I don't think it's you don't have to go and chase these things on these breakouts because it's going to take a very big fundamental change to get things to these things to break out of their range. So to me, it's still a range trade. I don't dislike them, but I'd rather be buying them on their lows when people don't like them and try to play that kind of, you know, big, wide range that's been out there since July.
I think quickly, Delta, you have about 11% EPS growth, maybe a tad more, especially if they're going to, you know, start raising numbers. And the trades are like 9.5, 10 times forward earnings. So I hear what BK is saying. They have been in a range, but this might be the beginning of that breakout in Delta specifically, which if it breaks through 56, which is about 8% from here, I think it's off to the races. So Delta sets up pretty well.
All right, next up here, the gaming stocks getting slammed today as Electronic Arts Star Wars Battlefront 2 game has created a major controversy for the industry. The Star Wars game launched with a pay-to-play format where gamers had to pay additional charges after paying for the game itself. The company turned off the in-game purchases after gamers expressed outrage. But despite the drama, these stocks are all up a ton this year. Take-Two is up 122%, Activision Blizzard up 64%, EA up 30%. Do you keep buying these names, or do you think perhaps, I mean, there are some investigations into that Star Wars game because the price for the game itself was actually fairly high?
Well, and there's enough negative sentiment out there right now that you would see after you've seen those runs. I mean, we talked about the runs in the semi-world, but how about these runs? I mean, these stocks have absolutely taken off to the upside. So does it make sense that they might even get a little bit further pullback? I think some of the valuations start to get kind of interesting, but I think we still have 10, 15% we could still drop back before they really get appetizing.
Yeah, I mean, this EA, man, if it doesn't hold 104, 105, I mean, it takes the elevator down significantly. Yeah. And there's no reason to jump in here again with a stock that's trading about 30 times, which is getting to be value territory, but not here.
Yeah.
104 was the low it made in July before it went to basically 122, but it's been basically rolling over ever since that. And to Tim's point, breaks 104, you have a beeline to 95, which if you go back to May, that's where we shot up from. So in my world, it's got to hold this 104 level.
But it's not a bad risk reward here if you can be quick on the trigger, right? So you know that if it breaks 104, that's where you're going to be out of it. Maybe you give it a half a buck or something like that. But it, you know, if you're a trader and you want to try to play this the bottom of this range, I actually think it's not a bad stab here.
I mean, are we going to get a seasonal lift from the holidays? We're going to get some
headline, sure,
right, about consoles selling off the shelves, and these stocks are going to pop.
Absolutely. And if you believe that, the best way to do it is the options world. I mean, we talk about volatility. You're talking about with Goldman Sachs. You said volatility come back in the market. Let's look at the VIX itself. We are still talking about a VIX under 11. We've been between the 10 and 12. We've been a little underneath 10. But the volatility really hasn't been there. Options are very inexpensive in some of these names.
Still ahead, the CEO of AT&T said something about the Time Warner deal that had shareholders going nuts. We'll hear from him in his own words. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, first in business worldwide. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast.
Bitcoin is crashing. Surging.
I'm confused.
Don't be, because resident Bitcoin guru Brian Kelly says he knows exactly what's going on and how to profit. Plus, Pete's bringing the heat, pitching one beaten down stock that's down 15% this year, but may have turned a corner. The name when Fast Money returns.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Bitcoin enthusiasts celebrated earlier today as the cryptocurrency surged way past the $10,000 mark, topping $11,000 this morning. But then about 3 seconds later, a butterfly in Asia flapped its wings and the cryptocurrency crashed in the afternoon. Bitcoin briefly fell below $9,000, erasing over $2,000 worth of its value in just a few hours and putting it briefly, ever so briefly, in bear market territory. But this is Bitcoin, man, so relax. The cryptocurrency did regain some of those losses, still up 915% year to date. Now, BK is going to live trade Bitcoin later on. He's going to tell us if he's buying or selling later. But in the meantime, we just want to know now what was behind the big moves today.
Well, so you had a tremendous amount of volume, right? We had this massive euphoria. If you just look at the Bitcoin chart, it's not immune from fear and greed, right? It's going to act like any other asset class out there. And so you had this massive amount of euphoria. You had a lot of volume coming in near the highs, and a lot of the exchanges couldn't handle the volume. They had 8 times the volume that they had back in May and June when we were talking about all-time highs then. So the exchanges went down. The buy orders disappeared, and you had these big, wild swings. I mean, this is not for the faint of heart. This is not an easy trade for folks, and I think actually today kind of proved that. But once the exchanges came back up, you saw this thing rebound. So it's kind of like the weather in New England. You know, you wait a while. If you don't like it, it'll change.
Can I ask you a stupid question?
You can ask me any kind of question. There are no stupid questions.
Like Coinbase, for instance, was tweeting that it was having difficulties processing orders and taking orders, et cetera. But when that happens, I mean, there are buyers and there are sellers. So why, I mean, it's not that the orders that they take in favor sellers over buyers. So there was still a predominant number of sellers in the market versus buyers causing this decline of 20% intraday.
So, right before the exchanges all went down, Bitcoin had already come off as high. Right. So one would presume that the volume coming in, the sellers were more aggressive. Obviously, for every sale, there's a buyer out there. Now, what I think is kind of interesting is Bitcoin trading is dominated by Asian trading, Korea and Japan being the biggest traders. Mm-hmm. When you saw the U.S. exchanges go down, you saw the buyers kind of disappear, or at least that buy pressure disappear, which would suggest there's a disconnect between the U.S., which may be more bullish on Bitcoin, and perhaps some of the Asia exchanges, and Asian traders were selling it.
This makes me scared. I mean, if I were just sitting on the sidelines and knew nothing about Bitcoin except what I was reading in the newspapers, and I saw this sort of intraday volatility, I would be
scared.
But
why would you be scared by this intraday vol when you've had intraday vol from inception? And ultimately, mm-hmm. What Brian is talking about is an infrastructure issue where ultimately it's not for lack of demand. It's not for people lacking conviction in crypto. I think the reality is that there is a funnel that all this money is trying to press through. And in fact, I think there's limited capacity. This is the one issue. This is why people are so excited about futures, because it will allow synthetic volume to go through this market right now.
All right. Well, despite today's drop, if you're still looking to get in on Bitcoin, you'll soon be able to do just that on another major market. Tim sort of teased it. Bob Pisani's over at the NYSE to break it all down. Hey, Bob.
Hello, Melissa. What's exciting investors is the expanding derivatives market for cryptocurrencies. That's adding some much-needed legitimacy. So last month, for example, LedgerX, this is an institutional trading and clearing platform, began trading Bitcoin options. That was a big move. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the CBOE, and today the NASDAQ announced that they're all set to roll out Bitcoin futures soon. This is more good news. Bitcoin futures will enable traders to short Bitcoin. That's a welcome development. Here's another piece of good news. With the passage of time, what we're seeing here is more platforms, more participants, more maturity for cryptocurrencies in general. Here's the question. Does this make Bitcoin more valid? The SEC seems to be saying not necessarily. There have been several attempts to create Bitcoin ETFs this year, and they've all been turned down by the SEC. They regulate ETFs. So here's the issue for the SEC. They say Bitcoin is an unregulated market, and because of that, they won't be able to enter any surveillance agreements between other relevant agencies. agencies like the CFTC to monitor this. So you can't really blame the SEC for being a bit worried here. If Bitcoin is unregulated, as they say, in their eyes, it would be subject to manipulation and fraud. And giving it exposure to a regulated market like the ETF business exposes the SEC to a lot of potential problems. So here's the issue. What would it take to be a regulated market? It's possible that establishing a futures market might go a long way toward addressing the issue, perhaps. But think about this. Bitcoin itself was sort of designed to be unregulated. While the blockchain's not been hacked, platforms supporting the cryptocurrencies have been hacked, and no one is necessarily regulating all those groups. So you can see why the SEC is concerned about this. And Melissa, I anticipate some of these ETF companies will refile with the SEC, though, on this news, hoping that the news around the futures market may be enough for the SEC.
Okay, Bob, thanks so much. And we did see some pretty interesting moves among the exchanges themselves in today's session. Initially, we had the CBOE, the CME, as well as the NASDAQ on the heels of the NASDAQ news that is launching its own futures product in the second half or the first half of next year. They all actually intraday hit a fresh record high and then pulled off of that. And that was because anything that touched Bitcoin.
Anything, you know, it's
great.
Exactly. It, you know, scarily reminds me of the 90s when people used to announce, hey, we have a website, and their stock would rip up 5 or 10%. What you're seeing in the equity markets now, you mentioned that you have Bitcoin or somebody at your company read about Bitcoin, and all of a sudden, boom, you're a Bitcoin stock. It's a little ridiculous. These guys, though, actually, when you took a NASDAQ, CME, CBOE, they're actually trading the product. They're going to get some revenue from this, so it does make a bit of sense, you know, and I think there's other products to come on the way here.
And I would say in terms of the CBOE, I mean, the volumes, I'm always focused on volumes, right? Sure. We talk about the stock volumes all being a little bit lower than they once were, and are they ever going to come back? Well, they've come back in the options world fast, and they're huge. As a matter of fact, just the other day, 23 million. We've had 5 days this month already where we traded over 20 million option contracts. So this is just one more thing I think this could be a great tool for people to use, the derivatives market, to trade in that whole world.
Absolutely. I just think people are looking to trade, and this is offering either direction. This doesn't even mean that people are going to get long. They're going to be trading this thing.
Trading.
Traders. It's an inefficient market right now. People love that.
All right. Yeah. We've got a news alert out of D.C. Let's get to Elon Moy with more. Elon.
Melissa, the Senate is voting to begin official debate on the Republican tax plan. This vote is happening a little bit later than we thought, but it is important because assuming that it does pass, it would start the countdown clock toward a final vote on the bill. Republicans would have 20 hours of debate, and then that would be followed by some time to debate amendments, and then they could take that final vote. Now, Senator Hatch, who is the chairman of the Finance Committee, said that he hopes that final vote will come by Friday. President Trump has said he is ready to sign the bill once it passes. So again, if this passes, Republicans will be able to begin debate on the bill. Back over to you.
The expectation, though, Elon, is that this step is going to pass, which will pave the way for that final vote.
It is at this point. I mean, anything can happen here as we're watching the vote tally come in. But one of the concerns with the vote being somewhat delayed was that Republicans maybe didn't have the votes to even begin this part of the process. The fact that they have called the vote does seem to suggest that they have the votes to actually see this through.
All right. Elon, thank you. Elon Moy in D.C. So yet another milestone. We're sort of on track here, progressing right along for the timetable to be met.
And that's something we've talked about, though, for a while. I mean, I've thought for a long time, and I'm no political theorist, but I thought they were going to ram something through by the end of the year. And to me, it looks more and more like that might be the case. And one giveaway for me, and I'm not trying to read into too much, but the president tweeted out, I think yesterday or 2 days ago, Chuck and Nancy didn't show up to our meeting. I'm paraphrasing, but at the end of the tweet, he said, I don't see a deal here. And to me, that's code for I'm going to get a deal done, because then he can go back and say, the great deal maker that I am, look what I was able to do for the people before Christmas. Here's your Christmas present. So, again, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I still think something gets done.
What's interesting about this is we talked about this yesterday. You know, you have Bob Corker, you got Susan Collins, you have people that have come on board that were very outspoken, and really, at the start of the week, we didn't think they were going to fall in line. The sausage that's being made here, and ultimately, there had to be some concessions to these folks. There has to be. And they've said, I want to wait and see what they are. So the bills that we've seen, not sure that's how they come out.
All right, still ahead. Chip stocks getting crushed today, posting their worst session since June. But did any of our traders buy this dip? We will find out. Plus, Pete is bringing the heat, getting ready to pitch one beaten down stock that he is calling a screaming buy into the end of the year. We've got the name when Fast Money returns.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Time for an instant replay. Almost exactly 2 months ago, Pete said to Just Buy Nike.
Ready for this move back to the upside. I don't think it's going to explode. I think it's going to be like Microsoft. I think it just continues to start to grind a little bit higher. They're moving online and they're killing it online right now. So they're growing in the right spots.
Pete was right. The stock did grow in just the right spot. Shares have rallied 15% since then. So, Pete, nice. What do you think about Nike now?
Still holding on to it. And part of the reason was I like where their growth was coming from because we already know that they have huge competition with Adidas in North America. So we know there's going to be some weakness there. But are they growing enough internationally? And I'll say that they are. Especially when I look at all the various emerging markets, specifically in China, up 9%. You start to look across the rest, mostly about 5% across Europe and Latin America. They've got growth where they need it. Online is where everybody's moving, and they've got deals with Amazon. I mean, I think that they're doing the right thing in attacking the e-commerce world the way they have.
All right, well, Pete, you've been on fire, so why don't you give us another home run idea?
Let's do it. Let's do it. I'm going back to my great state of Minnesota once again. And who am I going to go with? Target. There's a lot of different reasons why I like Target. If you go back and you look at the earnings, I got into this stock in the middle 50s, and the reason I got that opportunity was after earnings, they sold this stock off, and I thought they sold it off for the wrong reason. So here is why I still like this stock, even though it moved up significantly today. It's over $60. I think it might have got over $61. Great management. Brian Cornell, this guy's outstanding. He has a laser focus on where they need to go. Now, they're behind Walmart right now, but they're going to be starting to catch up with Walmart. And as they do, I think that's why this company really, under his leadership, they're focused on the right areas. Look at the strong fundamentals. This trades at a 12 PE presently. They've got earnings right now. They're given a dividend yield of over 4%. And when you look at the stock buybacks, they've actually shrunken their share count by 270 million shares so far. And they continue to grow that dividend for the last multiple decades. So that side of it. And where's their growth? Well, their growth is online, 24% last quarter. And when you look across at other areas, they're working within the stores themselves in electronics as well as Magnolia. Magnolia, guy probably knows this, but that's a little company that's out of, you know, I think it's on HGTV, where they actually are the ones that are inside their stores showing what they've got and actually adding to it, the store within a store for Target right now. For all those reasons, I like Target. I think it's too cheap. I think it gets somewhere up towards that 15% or 15 PE range, which is going to lift that stock up a little bit even better. You can see where it's kind of been holding down in here. It almost hit those levels before when it pulled back. We didn't have to hit those levels, but you're starting to see a little bit of a perk right now. I like what we're seeing. I think this stock's going to get up towards 70 once again.
Hey, Pete, it's BK. Yeah. First-time caller, long-time listener. Love your work. Got a question on this Target, though.
Yeah.
Everybody's concerned about the grocery business, right? That it's going to be a drag on earnings. They're not going to be able to turn it around. You have Amazon as competition now. How does that play into your thesis? Why aren't you worried about it?
They've got to do a much better job. Now, I'm going to be critical right now about my own stock. They actually have to do a much better job in the e-commerce world than they have so far. They're way behind Walmart. I think they can catch up. Right now, I'll give you one example. When you go to their online site, they have about 800 different items you can buy. When you go to Walmart, they have the entire store. That's where they need to make this up. They've got to improve on the online site. As they do that, they'll get a little bit better in the grocery. But I'm not as worried about that, Brian, because quite frankly, that is a very, very low margin area. The rest of it, they have strong margins right now. And that's because where they're getting their margins is outside of the grocery side. And that's what I like as well.
So, Pete, on margins, though, from the labor side, I am concerned because as this company looked back on Q4 last year, part of the weakness was because the in-store experience wasn't so good. They've gone out of their way this year to get the stores better stocked, better staffed. Labor costs are going higher. This is a major headwind for the whole sector.
They will be higher, Tim, but I think those are investments they have to make. They've got to make the experience something like, why do people come into the store? And Brian Cornell was talking about the fact that people still want to come in these stores. As much as everybody wants to push, it's all online. It's not all online. They have 30 million visitors each week, I believe is what he was saying. So they've got people still coming into the bricks and mortar side of this, but e-commerce, we all know that's where it's growing, so they've got to compete better. If they compete better, this stock is actually a 70, maybe even an $80 stock, I think.
All right, so let's vote. Buying or selling Pete's pitch for Target. Gee.
I'm going to say in English we say yes, in French we say oui, in Spanish we say si, and you were sitting here on July 13th.
How about Italian?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what we say, si as well.
What about
si,
you know,
si. July 13th, look what they said. And, you know, I was surprised about that November, I think it was the 15th or so when they reported earnings. The stock traded 55. It was all on the back of fourth quarter guidance. I think they were sandbagging a little bit. Valuation is compelling. We've said it for a while. I think target goes higher, so yes.
BK?
Well, for me, I actually agree with Pete. And I think he's spot on this one. Wow. I mean, this is the one you want to buy. I was in Walmart earlier this year. I think Target has the same type of opportunity.
Tim?
Look, I don't hate Target, and I certainly don't hate Pete, but I'm neutral on this stock. Stock's done nothing for the last year. I think they're headwinds for the whole sector. I am neutral. That equals no.
All right. Two buys, one sell here on the desk. But was Pete's pitch for Target a bullseye for you out there? Head to Twitter right now. You can vote in our poll. We will reveal the results later on in the show. Plus, media stocks sizzling as deal chatter heats up in the space. We'll hear what the Viacom CEO just said about media consolidation. Much more Fast Money right after this.
On this particular case, the Department of Justice chose to file the suit. And so we see absolutely nothing in this case that is anti-competitive, lawfully anti-competitive. And so as a result, looking at the facts of the case, we feel like we have a darn good case. And we feel like this is one worth taking and pursuing into the courts.
That was AT&T CEO Randall Stephenson earlier today with CNBC's Becky Quick discussing the DOJ suit against its merger with Time Warner. Now, media M&A has been a hot topic of late. For more, let's get to Julia Borson at the Business Insider Ignition Conference here in New York City, where she's been sitting down with industry heavyweights all day. Hi, Julia.
Melissa, everyone here has been talking about what media deal will come next on the heels of Fox's entertainment assets drawing interest from both Disney as well as Comcast, as well as the DOJ suing to shut down AT&T's acquisition of Time Warner. I spoke to Viacom CEO Bob Bakish. He said he was surprised by the DOJ suit and he will be watching its outcome. He did deflect my questions about whether Viacom needs to recombine with its sister CBS.
We might do a small acquisition here or there. For example, but one of the last things I did in international was acquire Telefe, the number one broadcaster in Argentina. We closed on that deal in, I think, November of last year. That was a fantastic deal for us. So we will look for things that are incremental to our strategy and can accelerate it. But again, I feel very good about the assets we own.
I also spoke with Discovery CEO David Zaslav. He predicted we'll see more vertical deals like the AT&T Time Warner one between content distributors and creators, saying he sees the distributors looking to acquire more product to make them really different.
More and more, they need great content to differentiate.
But does that mean that you'd be interested in selling to one of them?
No, but I think it means it's possible. I mean, you know, that's possible. But what's more likely is the reason that we bought Eurosport, the reason that we bought the Olympics, the reason we're buying Scripps is all that content we own on every platform.
Lachlan Murdoch also spoke here at Business Insider Ignition today. He dodged questions about whether he's interested in selling parts of Fox. He did, though, say that subscale businesses in the media landscape, not including Fox, will need to merge to compete. So, Melissa, the one consensus here is that we will see more deals.
All right, Julia, thank you, Julia Borston. It was interesting to hear David Zaslav speaking about the kinds of deals a la an AT&T Time Warner, which would imply he believes that the deal's going to go through.
Well, I mean, just, you know, this is where the industry is. They're going vertical. And it's just, you know, it seems to me, I think Mr. Stephenson outlined a very, you know, good point, and even at the expense of saying, hey, DirecTV needs some help, and that we're competing against 100 million subs plus in Netflix, et cetera. AT&T, by the way, got down to 33. That's a level. It's a five-year level on the stock. With or without Time Warner, that was an interesting place to buy. I think you stay in this stock.
Favorite media stock?
Would you rather?
With a deal and without a deal. Is it a different stock?
Huh. Favorite media. Well, right now, given where we are, I think Discovery Communications, you saw Mr. Zad. Look at the valuation on side trades at 8x forward earnings, huge short interest. That stock potentially could be in play. So that one for the bait, I think, gets you done. But Viacom is still cheap.
Without a deal on its own.
Backish.
All right. Same question to you.
Well, I own Disney, so that's going to be my answer. And the reason I would say that on top of that is I like the idea that at least Bob Iger is still kicking the tires around the place. Looking at Fox, looking at other things. When you look at Pixar and you look at Marvel and some of the franchises that they own, I still think this is a company that goes higher.
Still ahead, chip stocks getting slammed today, and traders are betting on even more pain for one name in the space. We'll give you those details. Plus, our very own BK, Brian Kelly, is about to do something that no man has done before on cable television.
Whoa.
How's that for a tease? See what he's got in store when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Recently, the hype around Bitcoin has skyrocketed, but many people still don't even know how to buy it. So we thought it would not only educational, but also fun, I should say.
Yes.
Our very own BK to walk us through the exact steps in a live trade. So BK is over at the Plasma. He's all set up. Take us through step by step. How do you do it, BK?
All right. Well, here we are. We're live at the Plasma. I have my Coinbase account, one of my Coinbase's account, right up here. So you can kind of see the dashboard that you have. I've talked about this a million times. It's really easy to use. So here you have the prices of Bitcoin all around there. You can see I have a little bit of Ethereum. I have a little less Bitcoin in there. So let's go and let's do a live trade on this. So I'm just going to click up here on the buy and sell button. You can see it comes up. I can buy Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, or I can sell that amount. And so I can either sell some Bitcoin, I can sell some Litecoin, I can sell some Ethereum. And so what am I going to do today?
What are you going to do, BK?
Buy it, BK.
Buy it, BK.
You know what?
Buy, sell.
I'm going to be consistent with what I did for myself today and what I did with my fund today, and I'm going to take a little bit off the table. I think it's probably time. So I have a small amount in here, and I did a small amount just because I wanted to show everybody, you don't have to buy one Bitcoin. I have $66 worth of Bitcoin in here. I've loaded it up. It goes to my bank account here.
Wow, you're right.
All I have to do is I click on here and say, I want to take my Bitcoin, and I want to sell it. I want to sell the maximum amount that I have, which is $66 worth. Boom. There's the live trade. I'm selling that. I'm going to confirm my sell. And I'm going to get my money on Tuesday. Oh, the sell failed.
Oh.
Maybe I should be buying it. Maybe that's the Bitcoin gods telling me to buy it. You know what? Let's see if we can do it that way.
Makes
all right.
Sound like it's real.
I'm going to buy $100 worth of Bitcoin. People are telling me, what are they saying here? We don't support amounts smaller than a dollar. Well, that's $100.
There you go.
All right, there we go. Okay, so now I can buy $100 worth of Bitcoin. Boom, they're gonna take it out of my bank account. I'm gonna confirm my buy. And I purchased it successfully. So the Bitcoin gods want me to buy it. It looks like it's going higher. That's how you do it, easy breezy.
Wait, so let me get this straight. This is Coinbase, correct?
This is the Coinbase app.
The system that has had outages, basically, difficulties all day long.
Yes.
You wanted to sell, but you couldn't sell. But you could buy.
You weren't using the right denomination, though? I bet it seemed like you were just going with the wrong size. You were too small.
Maybe.
Right?
Well, no, I mean, we can certainly try it again, but they've been having issues all day. So, yeah. I think it was probably just a glitch in the system.
All right. Well, that's how you do it. Easy breezy.
Wow.
Very lemon peasy.
That was smooth.
Speaking of the Bitcoin boom, our very own Dan Nathan is in Scottsdale, Arizona at a Credit Suisse tech conference. He says there's been a lot of buzz around Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. Hey, Dan.
There's been a ton of buzz. Hey, Mel. Hey, guys. Hey, just to be fair, Mel, I was trying to trade some tech stocks earlier today from my Fidelity account and was not able to transact on many different periods. So it was one of those high volume days. I think, a lot of systems got inundated, just to give Coinbase a little break there. But listen, this conference, there's about 100 C-level executives from publicly traded tech companies, and there's hundreds and hundreds of institutional investors, hedge funds, mutual funds, big money people. Nobody was particularly panicked. Everybody is talking about Bitcoin, but more about why didn't they buy more in their personal account, in their Coinbase account 6 months ago, that sort of thing. So it's really dominating that talk, much like back in the 90s where institutional investors were trading a lot of stuff, PA, personal account. So just real quickly today, I saw the CFO of NVIDIA speak. She was talking about crypto, had a question about it. They are not putting a whole heck of a lot of crypto. Yeah. Well, they're not putting a lot of faith in crypto going forward. So today, just an AMD, also a name associated with this. There was some put buying. Call volume was two times that of puts. There was a buyer at 2,000. Of the July 10 puts paying a buck.
All right, thanks a lot, Dan. Were you buying or selling Pete's pitch? The results of the poll right after this.
Ooh.
Well, Pete, they're selling your pitch on target.
That's Tony Braxton, go.
That's all right. Happy birthday to my mother, 89 years old today. Credit Suisse is my final trade.
Tim.
Any day with Tony's a good day. Nike going higher.
BK.
You know, I still love the Bitcoin, but I think it's time to take a little off the table.
Tenet Healthcare.
Mad Money's next.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.